Donald on the Kitchen talks about food. Donald on the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald on the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We get together here once a week to talk about food, farming, recipes, advice, and opinions right here in the studios of KHOI Community Radio. And we get by with little help from our friends.
Yes, the Donald on the Kitchen show is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led, nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org.
Yes, and thank you, our listeners, for listening and responding and letting us know what you think of this program and for your support of community radio. Oh, cold, snow, wind.
Yeah, but it's a roller coaster. In 2 days, it's all going to melt.
Oh, all
right. And then it's going to come again.
Oh,
and then
aren't we good? Oh, aren't
yeah.
we just
oh,
good?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I hope my windshield wipers unfreeze. That's all I can say.
We have had some pretty nice sun dogs. Have you seen the sun dogs?
What's a sun dog?
Sun dog. You look at the sun when it is this cold, cold, crispy, crispy sort of day. And on either side of the sun, there are what are called false suns, perihelion. You see a glow off to the left, a glow off to the right.
Is that when it's really bright or when it's kind of like today and a lot of moisture in the
atmosphere? Kind of like moisture. When it's,
so it's a water reflective thing. You think?
Ice crystals. Huh. And it is, you find that in the mythology and the explanations of ancient cultures.
Well, we're feeling pretty ancient these days.
We are.
A little like, primal out there.
I don't remember who it was. Was it the god Odin with his dogs on either side?
One on either side?
Yeah, one on either side.
Well, I got a dog. I got two dogs.
One on either side. So those are sun dogs. And they only happen when it's really cold and icy out. And we have had them quite a bit. Yes, we have. Ah, I hope you're keeping your bird feeders full because poor little things out there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the poor things. I have noticed lots and lots of woodpeckers and the...
I have my soot out.
Soot out. Yeah, there it is. They just love it. And a couple weeks ago, our wildlife biologist friend, Jim Pease, mentioned, well, the juncos weren't showing up like they usually did, but I've got lots of juncos.
They just moved to your woods.
Yeah, they're just late or something. But I've got all kinds of birds. It's so fun to watch them. I just wonder how they keep warm.
Are you still getting the coons coming up to steal?
Not yet.
Oh, it's they'll not that
find
bad.
They'll find it. That's always a trick to keep the other wildlife out of the bird feeders. But that's part of life. Got to keep all those people in the woods warm.
Beings, yes.
All the beings.
Our favorite beings.
Yeah. Well, most of us are fortunate to have enough to eat. We have lots of choices, and some people consider the vegan choice. Today we'll consider the vegan diet. What, why, and how?
Well, I have to say I have some sort of grocery store commercial food sites that I read the news on lately. It's marketing stuff and what's hot and what's going on in the supermarket world, da-da-da-da. And I see this article. Vegan diets will be the next marketing trend. Okay, this is following on the gluten-free trend, which has done very well in terms of making products and labeling them. You know, it's manufacturer's delight. You know, I mean, it's if you want to be gluten-free, it's not like people in this day and age are expected to just stop eating bread. No, you have to have bread that has no gluten. Well, that used to be an oxymoron, but now we have lots of breads and noodles and things that have no gluten in them. So apparently, according to Food Navigator, the next marketing trend will be vegan. There is a label for vegan. Now, vegan means no animal products used. So no dairy, no butter, no eggs, and certainly no meat products. It's also called a plant-based diet. So I was a little alarmed that all of these eating options, and this is not new, are turned into marketing options.
Well, wouldn't you know it?
You know, it's just like there are a lot of things to be said for a plant-based diet, but having it be the next marketing opportunity would not be my favorite concept. But
well, already we see a lot of artificial this, substitute that, and people that make these things go to a lot of trouble to make meat-like substances that aren't meat at all, or cheese-like substances that aren't cheese at all, but they call them artificial cheese or substitute meat. It's amazing.
And now the USDA is possibly, and they've done this in Europe, taking up it's part of a food labeling thing, whereas you won't be able to say soy milk. You might have to say because milk is a dairy product. So in Europe, for example, it has to be called soy beverage. You cannot have soy cheese in Europe. Now, we may come around the same bend here in this country. Hard to say. But the main thing that is interesting, one of the ideas, if you are becoming a plant-based diet person, it does entail more food preparation. But, of course, the marketing's going to make it so you have lots of instant options because there's two conflicting things. The generation that has larger and larger numbers of plant-based diet people also is the generation that eats out more and does less food preparation. So we got a little marketing opportunity, I believe, here. The issue, and this is a caution that I would say, when I was in my mid-20s, I did I was a vegetarian for 3 or 4 years. And I have to say, it was a marvelous experience because it really opened me up to not eating the standard American diet, which is an acronym, is SAD. Mm-hmm. But I learned how to cook multiple grain dishes, and the history of that period was there was a book called Diet for a Small Planet, Frances Moore LaPay, that was published 30 years ago, and in it she talked about food distribution issues, why it was important to eat more fruits and vegetables in terms of the geopolitical aspects of a lot of grain, for example, is fed cattle, right? Mm-hmm. So at the time, the idea of Diet for a Small Planet was that we were all thinking about, think of the starving children in India or think of the starving children in Ethiopia. And the idea at the time was if we ate less of that grain that we're feeding to cattle, more would go to other parts of the world. Well, of course, this theory has been thoroughly disproved and fairly debunked, although in Iowa you hear a lot about how we feed the world.
That's right. The last that I looked, there are still plenty of hungry people all over the world.
There are, and globally we produce more than enough food, even with our current system. It's actually a matter of economics and distribution. And Frances Moore LaPay has been working on this issue for 30 years. Actually, as Lana's husband Joe pointed out to me just yesterday, there was an article in Common Dreams authored by Frances Moore LaPay, where she once again reiterates that this idea that we are not producing enough food to feed the people or even the growing population is absolutely not true. And you can look that up on Common Dreams. Just Google Common Dreams, Frances Moore LaPay. It was published yesterday. In that article, she talks about, and you read it too, didn't you, Lana?
Mm-hmm.
She really talks about how it's the industrial paradigm of food production that's causing shortage in distribution and, food waste on one end and starving people on the other end. And she does remind us that more than – I've forgotten the statistic, but a good – more than half of the world's food is still produced by small farmers that is eaten locally, distributed locally. And according to the UN Food and Agricultural Organization, that small farmers' agroecology, which is organic, using low input methods, building your soil, that method of agriculture is the most sustainable. Absolutely. Now, we haven't really gotten that message in Iowa yet, but we're working on it.
Well, we live in a capitalistic system. We do. We try to make money. Everybody thinks that making money is a good thing. And that's why food is still considered a commodity to make money here, as other things.
Not about in the smaller grower tradition, which is mostly in the global south. It's not that people aren't making money.
Yeah.
They're just not making large amounts of money that's going to the wealthier top of the pyramid. Farmers actually can make a living there.
Right.
They don't have to buy expensive inputs, and the money stays in their local communities or countries. It's this bigger is better mentality, that, you know, unlimited growth mentality, that as a global human civilization, we're going to have to work on that one. It's not working as well as promised.
That's true. Let's get back to the idea of a vegan diet here. For some people, there's a certain amount, there's ethics to consider. There are people there are health reasons, but they just plain do not want to eat animals.
Well, this has grown, I think a lot of the attention to the animal welfare rights has come about through the work of PETA, among other people. And I can remember years ago they started with guilting people who were wearing fur coats. That's been very effective.
That's people for the ethical treatment
of animals. Animals, right.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that, you know, I have to agree to some extent with them about the way our industrial system has, you know, produced CAFOs and feedlots and not great humane slaughter facilities. And we're making some progress in correcting these things, but it's still going on. And the vast majority of meat produced in the American system is through these methods. So PETA started that, and now the vegan thing is, I think it's very popular, and in a good way, because the next generation has the bulk of the vegans coming along. In our studio with us, we have Felix Snowen, who is our new intern from the Greeley Journalism School, and Felix was in that under 30 demographic, just barely. Tell us how you eat, Felix.
Well, I do eat a plant-based diet. I don't buy meat at home anymore, although I do go out and eat meat. And a lot of my friends around the same age are doing the exact same thing, if not stricter policies. Most of them don't ever eat meat, actually.
And what personally prompted you to do this?
For me, it's for health reasons. I find that, you know, not buying meat forces me to eat a lot more vegetables and grains, which I find healthier. And when, you know, Americans always eat too much meat. But also I find that I appreciate eating meat much more. So it's important in my own culture to appreciate where my food comes from and how much I eat of it. So eating less meat kind of gives me more appreciation for where the meat comes from.
And I have to say that the idea of eating more vegetables and whole grains is a win-win-win. You cannot go wrong with that. None of us eat enough vegetables. I think the latest statistic, and this is held for a long time, was that only 10% of Americans even eat the recommended, I don't know if it's 4 or 5 portions of fruits and vegetables a day. It's not even that much, but hardly any of us do it. And also, although this is not necessarily for vegans, but switching, when you eat a plant-based diet, you do become more aware of your food sources. And there's nothing wrong with eating whole grains and more beans. That is always a really, really good idea. So those are the things about the vegan diet that I think are really helpful. Some of the problems that I see are coming really from, like, if you want to be a vegan and all you're doing is eating fake meat substitute hamburgers, that's not really a good idea.
Yes, talk more about that. You were telling me about something called cultured meat. It just kind
oh,
of
boy,
made me hungry
that
all over.
That is okay. A brave new world.
What exactly is that?
Well, they're the usual meat substitutes that are already on the market, and some of them like tofu burgers and Boca burgers, that's a brand name. These have been around for a while. Some of those meat substitutes are based more on real food. Like, it's just in my vegetarian days, I used to make
Bean burgers
and brown rice patties and stuff like that, which you can do in your own kitchen at home. However, when you get into the more complicated food manufacturing where they're like the latest rage has been pea protein. Okay. That is a very complicated machine-driven, constructed food product. You know, it's not something that, I mean, yeah, the peas grow in nature, but they go through a major food processing to get into that form where they look like meat. So I would say if you're going to be eating much of those products, I mean, once in a while, it's not going to kill you, but that is not a substitute for eating real grains and beans. Read the labels. These are highly manufactured products, highly processed foods. I must say that I think the ISU School of Nutrition really educates their students to make these kinds of, not necessarily the vegan products, but highly manufactured, constructed, you know, put a molecule of this and some of that and glom it together and, oh, gee, doesn't it make a wonderful mouthfeel? And then you add some aromas to it. And I'm sorry, but in my book, this is not food. And a full diet of this stuff is probably not a good idea.
Because we don't quite know what's holding that stuff together.
It's very far from, you know, what your grandmother would have eaten, for example, which is always my guideline. Now, cultured meat, boy, that is a whole brave new world. It is, I'm not sure I can even describe it, but it's a process where, and you know, the people investing in food technologies are going crazy over this thing. Somehow they are making a meat-like product that is cultured from cell by cell in the laboratory that's supposed to be. And it even, they've made it look like it has blood in it and everything. It's really, really, I would call it frankenfood. But, you know, I have my prejudices. I'm not eating that stuff.
Oh, goodness.
But they are rushing to bring that in several companies to market. I think Hampton Creek is one of them. I personally would be really careful about that. It's an untested product.
What are the cells? Do they? Well, I suppose it's a trade secret. What are the cells they start with?
I don't know.
We don't know.
I mean, we could find out if we were a little more literate in these areas. It's you know, and there are several companies doing it. It is not on the market yet. Don't worry, but it will be soon.
Oh my goodness. Well, the trouble is, everybody thinks. We all strive for the fact that everything is good because it tastes like chicken. Try it. It tastes like chicken. Well, okay. How about eating some good chicken instead?
Well, the emphasis would be on
good chicken. Go back to the original. Go back to what comes directly from the earth. And a vegan diet can come directly from the earth.
And I think there's good reason to eat less meat or at least be very... Ask a lot of questions about where your meat is coming from. Read your labels. Is it grass-fed, for example? Is it feedlot beef? The implications are profound. Mm-hmm. And I must say that even in just becoming vegan, that means mostly people are probably not eating as much feedlot or confined animal operations food. Mm. Now, we in Iowa have a lot of other options around us. You can know your farmer, know your food, and ask your farmer, how was this animal raised? You can buy directly from your farmer often, or even read the labels in the supermarket.
That's true. I ran across something in the supermarket, artificial substitute. And this has been around for a long time. I don't quite know what it is, But what exactly is artificial crab meat?
Oh, okay. That's,
is that grown or is that?
No, no. It's like crabs are, it's an expensive food.
Right,
so what
right,
they've taken is somewhat much more common food lower down in, I can't remember if it's pollock or something that is much more plentiful. They've reformulated it in a way to make it lumped together. They've added some coloring that makes it look like the red from the claw meat, from the crab claw meat. And maybe they use juices from processed crabs or something to give it flavor. It's still a fish, and it is not, it's not my favorite, but it's not the worst product on the planet.
Because it is still sort of in the
fish
family.
It really is fish.
Well,
it's a little more processed. But
there's something about how we eat with our brains, not just our mouth, because the idea of calling it crab as opposed to lower down the food chain sort of fish sounds a bit more, and you can get a better price for that.
Oh, way better, way better.
Artificial.
Lots of places.
We're talking about different ways to eat, different ways to think about diets, and we're talking about the vegan diet here. This is KHOI, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. We're back. You're listening to the Donalena Kitchen. We're talking about some food choices here. We can all learn to eat a little bit more healthy. What do you have to say about diets, Donna?
Okay, we're a little on about vegan today. And one of the main reasons that people are shifting to veganism is that, according to the calculations, as much as we can understand, because this is a very... This climate change business is really confusing, and there's a lot that we either don't know or don't want to admit or whatever. Anyway, the research has shown that a large contributor to greenhouse gases is, of course, the agricultural industry. So, and part of that is the emissions coming from burping and other
bodily functions.
Yes, of animals, right? And as well as the way manure is managed in confinement operations. So one of the reasons that people have cited for becoming vegan and eating less plant foods, animal foods, is that they want to reduce their carbon footprint. However, I'm going to quote from an article from Food Navigator. The title of the article is "Eliminating Animal-Based Food Production Might Not Be a Panacea for Greenhouse Gases." And one of the things that they say is that the greenhouse gas emissions shift rather than disappear. So if you were – this is not about, you know, if you individually make these changes, that's one thing. But to do it for all the people on the planet, then they run the numbers for that sort of thing. And it it turns out the researchers estimate that greenhouse gases produced by animal agriculture account for 49% of the food production. But they found that what happens is if you do not have the animals, you know, animals make manure. Manure has, for eons and eons, for the length of the lifespan of the earth, been used as fertilizer for the soil. So if we eliminate the animals, we eliminate the source of soil fertility. So to compensate by other means, which are not obvious even how we could do that, would present a huge problem. And I have to say that for people that have been working on the regeneration of this called regenerative agriculture, which means there's a cycle where you manage the cattle and the other animals who are making the poop for the soil fertility, and you put them actually back on the land rather than in concentrated feeding places. Mm-hmm. And they are a big part of regenerating soil, which is our best means for carbon capture in terms of nature cycles. So we need to eat maybe less animals from CAFOs and maybe more animals that are actually pooping in the right places and improving our soil biology. In other words, we are the whole agricultural human-animal cycle, including human excrement, mm-hmm. if it's placed back into the decay places where it naturally has always been, mm-hmm. like in the Chinese, they call it night soil, which they have used to fertilize their, you know, they don't flush it down the toilet. In mm-hmm. some places, they save it and it goes back into the soil where it decomposes, as it should. So if we're eliminating animal sources of fertility, that can cause a huge problem. And ultimately, the researchers concluded that eliminating animal-based food production to improve the health of people and the planet is not as clear-cut or as beneficial as widely believed when placed in the context of all of these changing implications. So by not eating meat, we're not necessarily solving the crisis. The problems are much deeper, as usual, than just personal choice. I'm sorry to say. I wish it were true that, you know, we could all just change what we eat and some of these problems would go away. But that is – it's a little bit like with the electric cars, you know. We all know that driving gasoline vehicles is terrible for the planet, yet we have not been given a commercially viable alternative. I can't go without my gasoline car unless I get a horse or only ever ride a bicycle or buy an electric vehicle that runs out of fuel within 300 miles and I couldn't even drive to Minneapolis in it, for example, from Ames. These are problems created within the system.
Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of fixing to do yet.
A lot of fixing.
And can we really shop our way out of a crisis?
No, I'm afraid not. It looks like we can't even vote our way out of a crisis anymore. This is a new topic. Oh, yeah.
But remember the energy crisis, if everybody put in those fluorescent bulbs, boy, that would solve
it.
No.
It has helped. It doesn't hurt. Yeah. I think morally and ethically, it is incumbent for us to take personal responsibility. That's really, really, really true. Just like you got to vote and you got to vet your candidates and you got to make your – I mean, we got a lot of work to do here. However, there is one thing I did want to say. Eating more fruits and vegetables and whole grains is good for everybody. There is no doubt about it. Way to go for the vegans. That's good. Or even being more vegan-minded, paying attention where your food comes from, what the animals ate, how they were raised, reading the labels. These are all things we can do, and it doesn't hurt us. Mark Bittman has a book that he wrote a couple of years ago. It's called VB6.
Who's Mark Bittman?
Mark Bittman is a New York Times, maybe not anymore, but he wrote food things a lot in the New York Times. He's a well-known writer about food systems and writes lots of cookbooks. So Mark Bittman's book VB6 is Vegan Before Six. And he wrote that book because he said, you know, being a food writer meant he was eating a lot of dinners out. And Mark Bittman, who's probably about my age, was getting fat. Ho, ho, ho. So he changed to eat no animal products before 6 o'clock in the afternoon,
huh.
Evening.
Well, that's
a nice arbitrary compromise, but that does make you eat more fruits and vegetables. It's not a bad idea.
Well,
or some other arrangement of your schedule and your personal choices. The idea is the vegans have some good things going for them, but let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater, as we used to say. Eating more fruits and vegetables and whole grains is a good idea. Way to go.
Right. One thing about vegans and vegetarians, we're all being a little more mindful. And if ever you want to think about this stuff, just invite a vegan to supper. And and not only will you discuss food and discuss what is and what isn't on the menu, but you realize we can get along with a whole bunch of different kind of diets. Yes, we can. And what we do matters. It matters to us.
Well, it does. It matters to us because it makes us be more thoughtful human beings. On any level that we can get more of that is a good idea.
Yes, it does. Well, I've talked about the winter weather we've been having recently. And so what do farmers do in the winter? Well, besides fixing things and planning for the next growing season, farmers get together to talk. There's a conference coming up this weekend called the Practical Farmers of Iowa Conference, and they've been doing this for many, many years. That's coming up this weekend here in Ames, and it has grown and grown. People get together, not just farmers. It started out just farmers, but people that are interested in food, people that support food, people that write about food, suppliers of food. We get together and talk about how to grow things.
And they share research methodologies and, oh, did this work for you? And what happens if I do this? And
yeah.
It's a really great network for that kind of thing.
Nick Odie has been producing podcasts, and he's been talking to farmers all this past year, and here's a little piece he put together about the conference coming up, but mainly, here's what a few Iowa farmers had to say about the land, their work, and the importance of sharing information.
Rural communities are important because they are literally the lifeblood. They create the food, they take care of the land, and they sustain all of us, whether you're rural, urban, or in between.
In this audio segment here, you're going to be hearing four Iowa farmers: Sarah Gilbert, Jeremy Gustafson, Jenny Kiner, and Wade Dooley. They're all Practical Farmers of Iowa farmers, and they are not only growers of things, but they have opinions on soil, communities, land stewardship, and hope for the future.
Well, soil is where it all starts. You know, we're all soil farmers, really. And if you revitalize the soil, you keep the land where it needs to be, you open it up for next generations, you sustain the people that are there, you sustain the communities around them, and it just builds and builds and builds, and it all starts with the soil. So I think revival is perfect.
What I notice here in Iowa is especially in the farming industry, is as business gets larger and larger, we're losing the families in our neighborhoods. And that's what I really like about PFI is with the diversification of everyone that's in PFI, you see a lot of people coming back to the rural communities and being able to sustain their family operation, either be it with livestock or with diversified into crops and livestock and vegetables. So it's nice to see that. You can really see how involved PFI members are in their communities, and a lot of with the CSAs and with the direct marketing that you see now, there's a good connection between the town and cities that was missing for a lot of years and now is starting to come back. and that's good to see.
When I hear the term revival, I think of bringing something back that's important. And I feel like we maybe take our land for granted, and we, for example, our topsoil, you know, we've lost so much of it through erosion and not proper techniques. And we need to be stewards of the land to protect our soil. And if we don't have fertile soil, we're not going to have good grow technique, we're not going to have good crops, we're not going to have good yield. So it all comes back to the soil, and that to me is the main focus of this PFI conference, is bringing that back, and I'm excited about that.
PFI helps revive small towns and our social network that we've got in this state by giving us all hope for the future. We work together, we talk together, we share information, and we do it in such a fashion that we all can grow. And it is one of the best groups for that. We can get along. We don't have to go along with our neighbors, but we can learn how to get along with them, and that is huge in building community.
That was some words from four Iowa farmers who are looking forward to the Practical Farmers of Iowa Conference this coming weekend. The theme of the conference this year is revival, a very positive thing to think about. That's January 18th to the 20th. For more information on that, go to...
And not in the biblical sense. This is about community revival.
Right.
Land usage and fertility revival.
Right. We can all use some of that. So go to practicalfarmers.org for more information on that. And Donna and I will be doing things at the conference.
Yep,
but we will have things to say next week about what went on there. And we'll be talking to a really interesting man who's coming to talk at that conference.
Yeah, he's the keynote for the conference, so I think it'll be a real highlight. It's James Rebanks. We've had a little bit about him, but we are going to actually have an interview with him in the station, and that will be our show next week. So he is a sheep farmer from the Lake District in northern England, and his book, what's it called, Shepherding Life or something like that, is been on the New York Times bestseller list for a long time, and we're going to ask him why it's of interest to so many people, this thing about maintaining rural life. Should be a good show next weekend. Next week, Tuesday.
You'll have a lot to say about that. That's good. This is KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen Show. You can find out more about this show by going to khoifm.org. That's the community radio page, and you can find our web page there. We've got recipes. We've got archives. You can find out more about us and more about this fine radio station. Thank you. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. I've been using this cold winter weather to read more books. I can't think of a better thing to do than to read more books. And I have a book to suggest to anybody who wants to find out more about, well, this is in the news lately. This is in the news. Yes, this is a book written by a man named Kazir Khan. It's called An American Family. There was this brave couple, this man, this woman, originally from Pakistan, who lost their middle son to a suicide bomber in Iraq.
He was in the military.
In the military, mm-hmm. 2004, and he was invited to speak at the Democratic National Convention when Hillary Clinton was running, and he was the man that stood up and talked about how he loved being an American.
He and his wife.
He and his wife. And they talked about what he thinks of America. And actually, he loves America. This story is about his version and his transition and his journey here to be an American. His family. He has three sons here. He's a lawyer. He has always been talking about this, and he had the audacity and the good sense to raise up his copy of the Constitution in front of the television cameras and ask then candidate Mr. Donald Trump if he had ever read it. And it caused quite a stir. And this is a story that kind of goes along with that. You'll find out it's a really good family to know.
Occasionally it's good to read a book rather than just the news headlines, and you get much more in-depth understanding of what the situation might really be.
Okay, that's An American Family, A Memoir of Hope and Sacrifice by Kazir Khan, K-H-I-Z-E-R-K-H-A-N. And also,
it's at our public library.
Yes, of course it's at our public library. I get my best books there. And also, I have been having a little lighter reading. I love the author Gary Paulson. And on the coldest day of the year, I'm reading his version and a very well-told tale of running the Iditarod. So, if you're cold here in Iowa, here's a story that it's fun to read. He loves his dogs. He loves adventures. Gary Paulson, the book is called Winter Dance, The Fine Madness of Running the Iditarod. And that was from the library, too. They knew I was coming. They pulled out a whole display of cold winter reading, and that was part of it. Also, Gary Paulson is a very prolific author. He has written hundreds, really, really hundreds of children's books, too, and it's fun to read. My favorite children's book that he's written is called Harris and Me. That's one of his good ones. Anyway, Gary Paulson, Winter Dance, The Fine Madness of Running the Iditarod. Donna, more about food.
Okay, just a little. We'll take the vegan question aside, but a step that we could all make in improving our diets would be perhaps to not buy the rotisserie chicken at the grocery store. It's maybe an impulse buy. Maybe you think, oh, golly, I don't have time to cook the chicken. Let's buy the already cooked chicken. They're so cheap. Well, there should be your red flag to begin with.
Oh, but Donna, they look so good. They're going.
And they smell good, too.
Oh, okay. How do they do that?
Well, so they're obviously using the cheapest possible chicken, which means the most, I would say, unfortunate bird. And, for example, if you read the ingredients here, for example, from Costco's Kirkland brand rotisserie chicken, the ingredients are salt, sodium phosphate, modified food starch, potato dextrin, carrageenan, sugar dextrose, and spice extractives. There are 460 milligrams of sodium in a 3-ounce portion of Costco chicken. The thing is, even though the prices are not that high, it doesn't take long to cook a chicken yourself. Mm. You know, either throw it in the crock pot and it's done when you come home. Or one thing I do a lot is I often buy skinless, boneless thigh meat because you just chop it up and it cooks really quickly. It's not like 5 minutes. Hello? By the time you get the chicken home, you carry this warm chicken home and you take it out of its lots and lots of excessive packaging and you cut it up, it's really no more effort than just cooking your own chicken. I would suggest that you buy, maybe eat a little less chicken and buy the best that you can afford.
And we most of us have access to an oven or a crock pot.
You can do it in a cast iron skillet
cast
on top
iron
of the
skillet,
stove,
yes.
You know.
Oh, but those chickens going around in the
it's the smell. I think it gets you every time.
Yeah.
But it's an easy item to eliminate from your habits and to just start to cook your own chicken, because then you can choose. I, of course, buy an organic bird at the very least. Or there's other smart chickens that, you know, read the label. I have to say that the really, really cheap chicken, and this is my middle class luxury, I have to say, I buy the really 99-cent cheap chicken and I make dog food out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it the dog chicken. Well, of course, lots of people eat that kind of chicken.
Well, yeah.
And it's, you know, if that's all you can afford, it is a good source of protein. But if you eat a little less of that protein, if you can, and buy a little better chicken, you might improve your health a bit.
There you go. And on the other end, there's probably happier raised chickens on the other end. Chickens have a short life, but they could at least be
free range.
Yeah,
4 weeks for these little guys on most of the rotisseries.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, tiny little chickens.
I have a success story here. I had a good year for onions and leeks. So I'm still eating leeks from my garden. Huh? But it's way too cold for the leeks out in the garden. So long about Christmas, when they were mulched out in the garden, I pulled up and dug up everything in my leek row.
Well, I suppose you had to do that before the ground froze.
Right, totally.
So you have to guess how bad the weather's going to be in advance, right, Lana?
Well, you can do this before. Also, it only works if you have lots of leeks left over, which I did. I picked up all these leeks, left all the dirt and all the roots on the bottom of the leeks, stuffed them in a big plastic round tub, or you could use a 5-gallon pail or whatever. So actually, they're kind of packed in there tight, and they're all standing up. I didn't cut the tops off. These are not nice looking leeks at all. They're all real. They look all sad, and the leaves are all curled up. But I moved that whole big tub of packed full leeks down to my basement. It has been cold enough that the basement.
What do you think is the temperature in the basement?
Oh, I'd say 55. It's close. Uh-huh. It's in a cold corner.
Uh-huh.
It's cool as you could get it. I don't let them freeze, but cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been using those leeks.
Obviously not the tops.
Not the tops, no. You take them off. You take off the dirt and you take off the icky tops. But there's a lot of leek left, and which is good. So I've heard of storing leeks for a long time. I've just never had a whole lot of extra leeks to practice with. And I want to report that I have had leeks storing in my basement and still have a few left. I made squash leek soup this week, and there it was. It's nice to have that stuff in your basement.
I know. I have squash, a refrigerator full of big kabocha squash in my basement, and I am eating it.
Mm-hmm. There's something about the coolness of a basement or the coolness of a – do you turn the refrigerator on?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
It is. That is a
right.
Steady temperature.
Right, so I'm holding them probably around 40 degrees.
Yeah, there you go. So all that stuff from the garden, yes, it can still hang on. Yes, it can, even if it is really cold out there.
I hope you don't have mice in your basement, do you?
I have cat.
Oh, that's right. I mean, one of the reasons I have to store in my refrigerator in the basement is because otherwise the mice would be eating them all.
Yeah, they do. But, see, it's one of these ways that animals and people work together really well.
Yeah, I give the basement to the mice, but I don't put any food down there.
Ah, very
so
good.
They can stay warm, but they have to feed themselves somewhere else.
Very good. We mentioned that the Practical Farmers of Iowa conference is coming up. People do like to go to that. Everybody likes to get together and talk shop. And also next weekend, the Iowa Fruit and Vegetable Growers Conference is next weekend. So you can find out
more. You mean the weekend after PFI?
Yeah, the weekend after.
Not PFI. At the same time.
No. Okay. Not, it's a whole week and a half away, long time. But that people get together and talk there too.
Because Lana's a fruit and vegetable
grower.
Well, yeah,
and there's something else coming up this weekend. I do believe that the tickets are long gone for this, but put it on your calendar for next year. The Robert Burns Night is coming up.
Oh, boy. Men in skirts.
Those are called kilts, Donna.
Oh,
kilts.
Oh, I do love a man in a kilt.
This is a wonderful evening of food, Scottish heritage, and why they get together to raise a glass to this guy, Robert Burns, I don't know. But they'll get together and read poetry and have a good
probably
time.
Probably any excuse. And it's at Alluvial, right?
Oh, no, it's at Prairie Moon Winery, which
is at Prairie Moon Winery.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Oh, it's a nice meal, and I think they have haggis and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, and it's also sponsored by Marcus at Mucky Duck.
The Mucky Duck. Yes, the Mucky Duck.
Ever bringing culture from the British Isles to Ames. Yes.
Yes,
way to go,
are.
Mucky Duck.
Yes, we are. And I hope to have a little bit of report on that, too. I think it'd be a fun thing to go and find out what exactly is going on and who is this guy, Robert Burns, anyway. I hear they talk funny. It'll be fun.
Oh, yes.
And yes, there will be men in kilts. Look forward to that.
That's Saturday, right? This coming Saturday.
This coming Saturday,
yeah.
Later in the Prairie Moon. And this is a bit of gossip here. I happen to see a television commercial for that event that aired during the Late Show Stephen Colbert show a week and a half ago.
So an Ames event is now advertising on public radio, public television.
Oh. No, not public. It was whatever, CBS.
Oh my, that was probably expensive.
Easy chair there. But there it is. It's a big night, and we'll let you know more about that. Thank you for joining us today. We talked about the vegan lifestyle and
not eating rotisserie chicken.
Oh,
you can cook your own damn chicken.
I think that's a good
idea.
It's
really not that hard.
And do eat more fruits and vegetables.
That's right. And whole grains.
We get together here around this kitchen table on the Donna Lana Kitchen every Tuesday at noon. And it's repeated 7 p.m. in the evening on Tuesdays on KHOI 89.1 FM. Or you can listen anytime. You can download us. You can put us on your device. We can podcast and all that kind of stuff. Go to khoifm.org. And support this radio station. We get by donations. This is not a big corporate-owned entity here.
No, this is local and scrappy.
And we are scrappy volunteers that put this together. Yes, we do. Support this fine radio station. If you enjoy the Donna Lana Kitchen, if you enjoy the other programs, put your money where your ears are and donate. Thanks for your support. We had music today by the fiddler, Elster Frazier, and the cellist, Natalie Haas. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.